Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Commander and Coffee. I'm Cypher.
And I'm Cork.
And that must mean my name is Y.
And we're all here today for another exciting episode of our favorite podcast. Today we are talking all about mono red dwarves, to be in fact. We're talking about Magda, Brazen Outlaw. Super powerful commander, came out in Kaldheim, had some success in the tournament scene, did some wins. Super cool and interesting commander, and I can't wait to talk to you guys all about it. But before we get into that, guys, how you doing? What's been going on since last time we met?
Not too much. I'm just kind of relaxing, trying to beat the heat up here. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Work's going well. Existing in life, you know?
I successfully grew one plant.
One whole plant.
Yeah, one whole plant. I visited some friends in Florida back in May, and I took some propagations back with me. And I am pleased to announce that I am officially a plant dad. It finally flowered last week. So I accomplished so much.
Congratulations. Look at you.
I don't know what plant it is, by the way. I have no idea. It's got some little red flowers on it. That's all I know.
Did you think of a name yet?
I guess the plant's name is now Magda.
Perfect. How convenient for our episode today.
For me, it's kind of been busy. I have a lot of life stuff's been trying to catch up on and getting some stuff done there. I've been jamming a lot of Pauper, like I said last episode, I think, is when I really started getting into it. Really fell in love with Cycle Storm, and so now I have that deck, and then I just got into that version of Twiddle Storm. I've been gold fishing that a lot. That deck seems a lot of fun, so I've just been vibing.
You're approaching your goal of being able to play fast combo in every single format.
We're getting there. I will have my fast combo in every format, whether you like it or not. But yeah, that's
what I won't.
That's what I've been
working. Not many of us do.
Why or Cork? What are we drinking today? What's on the docket for coffee this week?
We actually got it just a little while ago. I'm going in totally blind, so Y knows what it is. He picked it up at one of the local shops here and had them make it however they brewed it, and he got it for me.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what it says on the menu. It is a mocha, and it is not just any mocha. This includes a house ganache. Cork's is with dairy, mine is with oat milk. Yeah, got them to go. I had this once before. I know I really am a big fan of the ganache that they use, like just on their desserts. So in their mocha, I'm probably going to be a fan.
Yeah, it's really good. The mocha is very strong and the ganache comes through, and it's almost a little too overpowering for me on the sweet side, because I typically drink my coffee black. But I'm really enjoying it because it has a dark chocolate ganache kind of feel.
I was going to say, it's almost like an a la mode brownie kind of ganache, like that drizzle.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. So with that out of the way, let's get into this week's deck tech. Like we said at the top of the show, we are talking about Magda, Brazen Outlaw. This is one of Y's signature decks. He's going to lead most of the discussion through this, while I act dumb because this is mono red and does not at all allow me to cast Ad Nauseam or protect it and do other fun combo things. We'll get through it the best we can. So again, looking at Magda Brazen Outlaw being the 1 and a red 2/1 legendary creature, that gives your other dwarves +1/+0. We'll find out if that's relevant. But whenever your dwarf you control becomes tapped, create a treasure token. And then you can sacrifice 5 treasure tokens to search your library for an artifact or dragon card, put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So with that, why? What are we doing with this? What's going on here?
We're doing more than meets the eye here.
Why are we doing this?
We are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
who's on first?
We are.
Who's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know who's on third.
So there's quite a bit about this card to break down. This is just a generally very well-costed card. This is what like a 2-mana legendary creature looks like in the modern day, right? It's got a good amount of text, and it does a little bit of everything. And I don't know, for like the 4 players trying to build Dwarf Tribal after all these years, they can finally have a home for it. So on the surface, this is a really awesome casual card, right? And I think it caught a lot of people off guard and continues to catch a lot of people off guard that you can play this in a more cutthroat setting. One of those reasons is kind of the easiness that you can get these activations of treasure making if you build your deck around her. Specifically, whenever a dwarf you control becomes tapped, I know Cypher said it, but I'm going to emphasize, whenever a dwarf you control becomes tapped, create a treasure token. This does not have to be in combat. A lot of these tribal commanders, when they have relevant text, it usually refers to combat damage or attacking or blocking, something like that, something more straightforward. Even Najeela is, you have to declare as an attacker. But for Magda, all it cares about is that your dwarf becomes tapped. We're going to break it down into the deck list. There's a lot of ways that you tap outside of combat, so you can generate this treasure token value even into the mid and late game if you want to. There's a lot of ways to trigger Magda.
It's very akin to like what kind of Malcolm's trying to do, right? Like those that are fans of Malcolm decks, you know, that's a commander that generally is deemed as really powerful in being able to create treasures off of you know, combat by attacking with pirates. This one you don't even have to go to combat with, right? But you're still generating that,
right,
that insane mana push from your commander.
And you have those examples in Malcolm decks, like with Kedis and with Glinthorn, that you're dealing non-combat damage and getting treasures. The same way Malcolm triggers, you're cheating Magda triggers in a way throughout the game.
The nice thing about her too is she also helps pay for her own commander tax, right? If like the game's really bad, because you just make a couple treasures and then that's the two that you have to pay for to get her back out on the board and keep doing your thing.
Yeah. In the face of early removal, you have a pretty readily available outlet to recast pretty easily. Obviously, you want to keep your tempo. You don't want to lose the tempo that you built on the first cast. But in the event that you do have to recast, it's really nice. And also, the printed CMC is just two. So getting to four mana just in and of itself isn't that much of an ask, especially in a mono red deck, which is playing plenty of ritual effects and fast mana rocks and other things of that nature.
There's a lot that goes on there, like being able to just like cast her and then like use a Springleaf Drum to make like a mana plus another treasure. So like you get like your mana back. Just, she's really cool in that effect.
Yeah, cards like Springleaf Drum and Paradise Mantle are really big things in this deck. You normally wouldn't be running these in a mono color deck, but just like I said, the outside of the combo, outside of combat, it's a really good way to generate treasure value. So you're playing a bunch of cards that make you do a double take looking at the list for the first time.
Yeah, CEDH All-Stars like Ashnod's Transmogrifant.
What was that?
I think I just had a stroke.
Ashnod's Transmogrifant?
I have the Italian one in Moxfield, don't I?
Yeah, it's the Italian one. I tried to translate it in my head.
I've made your life so much more difficult. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, when you look at it, you see cards, you know, like the CEDH All-Star, Ashnod's Transmogrant, you know, and you're like, yeah, absolutely. I play that in all of my decks.
That's not even touching on the actual dwarves that we play, because although there are ways to, like I said, cheat the treasure making, you can do it the old fashioned way. You are playing pretty much all of the playable. Actually, no, not even the playable ones. You're playing every dwarf that has a CMC of one in this deck. I mean, including CEDH All-Star Dwarven Trader. I will read off the card for you. Dwarven Trader. It costs a red. It is a 1/1. It is a dwarf. That's the card. Also, it's the same artist as Lion's Eye Diamond, which we do not play.
I don't even have words. I was going to make a comment on how far the iceberg goes, but I think how far does the volcano go up is more apt.
My favorite one is Dwarven Scorcher, because the card just doesn't even make sense to me. It's so bad.
Yeah, you know, actually, technically on paper, Dwarven Trader is the worst one, but like, the one that feels the worst is, you're absolutely right, Cypher. The one that feels the worst is Dwarven Scorcher, hands down.
It like looks like it has text, but it doesn't.
Yeah, you can sacrifice it to deal one damage to target creature, unless that creature's controller decides to take two instead. So if your opponent is at two life and they have a one toughness creature, this card becomes the exact thing that you need.
In only that specific situation. It just gives your opponent the best of both worlds, right? They get to choose what's worse. Lose my creature or take two damage. I get choice, and it's just so bad. But when every dwarf has the context of tap, make a treasure, they all become birds of paradise, and that seems great.
Every dwarf has its day.
And you'll see in playtesting that in the context of CEDH, it's really hard to compare Magda to another relevant deck. And I think a lot of the time it's easier to compare to something lower power just because of the nature of the deck and the dwarf tribal. You have a good like 15 cards in this deck that are just completely unplayable elsewhere. But I think if you had to compare it to one, I guess, more familiar, more known deck out there, I'd compare it to like a Yuriko deck. You're trying to find your early tempo and trying to get in for the value that you can. In Yuriko's case, that's card advantage. In Magda's case, it's treasure advantage. So you're trying to build up that critical mass of treasures, because Magda is trying to count to five. Once you count to five treasures, you get a Magda activation that you can sit on for as long as you want, because you can activate Magda, her tutor effect, at instant speed. Once you've done that, you can hopefully, I mean, in a perfect world, you can try to go for the win with the Clock of Omens combo, which I will break down in a minute. But you'll see oftentimes that the board is not what you need it to be to get your full combo. So in that event, you can use your first batch of five treasures to go for a Stax piece. The biggest two are Tanglewire and God Pharaoh Statue. So you're building your game state like a Yuriko deck, or maybe like a Nigella deck is. And then just the next step from there is where it diverges into its, I feel it's kind of its own deck.
So kind of comparing it to those then, what would you say the type of deck this is and like the speed of the deck? Is this like a proactive deck? Is this an adaptive deck? Is it a mid-range deck? You know, is this like a turn one combo kill, or are we trying to wait the game out? Like, what style of deck is it, and what turn do you typically try and secure the win on?
Magda wants to be a combo deck, but in many pod compositions, you have to kind of take your medicine and play it like a stacks deck, at least to begin. You are going to be finishing with a combo in most cases. Plan A is to combo. Plan B is to deploy stacks and then combo. If you are just going for the combo line, then you can be looking at a turn three. And otherwise, then you're just trying to get a stacks piece in play on turn three, like the best one in your deck. And then you can rebuild within another 2 to 3 turns to go for the combo finish there. So depending on what you're responding to, it's either a turn three or a turn five or six deck.
So you're in that like early combo, but can grind a little later if you need to.
Yeah, the deck has a lot of grindable pieces, and there's more that I think could be added to the deck in the future. It just depends. Like, it's kind of strange, right? I think like when you're going for stacks, like a traditional stacks deck, you're maybe trying to complement that with some kind of mid-range or control aspects, like a lot of counter magic and things like that to protect your pieces. Magda is just trying to find another kind of piece of whack-a-mole to pop up before they can break down what you've set up already. So I think it's kind of unique in the play pattern that it has, because someone sitting across the table from a Magda deck, you're not quite sure what they're trying to go for either in a given game. Because depending on, like I said, pod composition, but also, you know, your opening hands and your opening draw steps, if any early removal gets deployed on your commander or your other creatures. So trying to pick out if they're going for combo or stacks, I think, is one of the interesting factors of playing against a Magda specifically, because it really could be either.
So what's the appeal, being a kind of proactive combo deck as it is, what's the appeal of why Magda over something like Godo, right? Godo, the infamous mono red commander of the CEDH format, I think touted as one of like the hardest to pilot to master, but like one of the like entryways into CEDH. Why would somebody want to pick up Magda over something like Godo?
I think it comes down to what you're trying to beat and what kind of play patterns you like as a player. I think Godo rewards people who can kind of see the big picture of their opening hand. Godo really needs a strong mulligan, in my opinion, to do well. People oversimplify and say you count to 11, but like that's not always what it breaks down to, right? So I think that's one aspect of Godo, is being able to count to 11 in the best way you can. Magda has more nuance and in-between steps that you're trying to navigate to five treasures, and that normally doesn't happen in a single turn, whereas Godo is trying to chain rituals and fast mana and catch people off guard more often.
Oh, I agree with that statement 100%. I mean, one of the first things when you see some people, I think it's changed a lot over the years. I haven't played too many 60 cards competitive formats in a while, but when you looked at like a Storm deck, for example, in 60 cards, like, oh, that deck's easy. You just count to 10 and then you win the game. It's like, well, yeah, kind of, but like there's a lot of nuance in getting there, right? Like, it's not like that easy where you just count to 10 and you win the game, right? There's a lot that has to happen. So now that we kind of have talked a little bit about kind of Magda and holistically what she is and how she plays and things like that, being a mid-rangey adaptive combo deck, why don't we kind of go through how we're closing out this game and how we're winning this game. I mean, I think we've come to the conclusion to use our bad to very bad dwarves to help generate some treasures. Magda makes some stuff, and then obviously Magda has a tutor engine in, built into there, which I'm assuming comes into play. But why don't you walk us through kind of how we kind of what our game plan is and what our goals are?
So the crown jewel of the Magda combo involves a Clock of Omens. In a perfect world, like I said before, that is the thing you're tutoring for once you have five treasures with Magda. And hopefully you can just go off right from there, right? To do that, you need a Clock of Omens and a Metal Dwarf and your Magda. And by Metal Dwarf, I mean you need an artifact creature that is a dwarf creature type. There's a couple ways we can do that. The obvious one is just the text on the card. The best one being Universal Automaton, because it's a one mana, 1/1 artifact with Changeling. So it checks all the boxes you need for this combo. There are also a couple ways in the deck to take a normal dwarf and make it into an artifact dwarf. The unpronounceable Ashnod's Transmogrant, that's a way to do it. You also have Liquid Metal Twerk and Liquid Metal Coating.
I pronounced it after a second try, thank you very much.
Honestly, that's probably less than most people take, so good on you. I'm not faulting, I'm not criticizing, it's a hard word. Okay, so, clock combo. So you have your clock in play, you have your Magda in play, and you have your Metal Dwarf in play. And also worth mentioning, Magda can be the Metal Dwarf for this combo. If you make Magda into an artifact creature herself, that works as a two-card combo then. So Clock of Omens reads, tap two artifacts to untap target artifact. That is repeatable. We don't need to tap clock specifically to use this ability. So it's just like Virtual Rangers with elves. You tap any two artifacts in play as often as you like to untap one target artifact. And because it's a magic card, we found a way to break it in the 15 years it's been out. So what you do is you tap your Metal Dwarf and your Clock of Omens, and your untapped target is the same Metal Dwarf that you tapped. When you tap a dwarf with Magda, you make a treasure. So at the end of this, you have a newly untapped Metal Dwarf and one untapped treasure. So now Clock of Omens sees that you have a Metal Dwarf and an untapped treasure. You can tap those two things to again untap your dwarf. Each time you do this, you're now making a new treasure. And at the end of this loop, as many times as you want, you can make infinite tapped treasure tokens. And Magda does not care for her tutor ability if those treasures you sacrifice are tapped or untapped. So you can sacrifice those tapped treasures as often as you like. And through a couple other cards in the deck, you can loop your deck and find your win con, whatever suits the situation. The easiest go-to is just a grinding station. That's pretty common. You're able to churn through your deck with a grinding station, mill your opponents out, because you have all those treasures to sacrifice to grinding station and ways to keep untapping it. And you have an Elixir of Immortality to shuffle your graveyard back into your deck. So you're getting all your mana rocks in the meantime. Looping your deck, you can find a Pyrite Spell Bomb to kill them with damage if that needs to happen. Or you can simply mill them out with Grinding Station and then crack a Memory Jar. There's no one definitive way to end the game at that point. The goal is just to get Clock and a Dwarf in play. Once you've made infinite treasures with the Clock combo, then you have the win locked up.
There's no Thassa's Oracle, put it on the stack, the game ends kind of line. It's more intuitive than that.
Right, but it is worth mentioning that the combo is at instant speed. Once you're going with the clock, all your Magda tutors are instant speed in response to anything they might have. And if there is something like, in an extreme case, something like a silence, you beat silence actually, because it's all activated abilities from that point on. And if it's an Angel's Grace, you can simply mill them out and kill them in draw step at that point. So it's pretty safe to those lines in a way that Thassa's Oracle actually is not.
Yeah, so once you assemble those five treasures, you're pretty much, you can choose to go now, or you can choose to hold, whatever you need to do at that point. You have options.
Right, you're just banking on what interaction they might have. Is it removal? Is it some kind of silence effect? Is it some kind of stifle effect? That's just a decision you have to make as a player on a case-by-case basis, like every other combo. I feel like my description kind of overcomplicates the situation that you're finding yourself in. Really, you're just trying to get the Clock of Omens combo going. Once you've done that, everything else you do is like fairly inconsequential, because you kind of just vomit things on the field repeatedly until people scoop up their cards.
Yeah, this feels sort of like it's a combo deck, and but it feels sort of like Enola, right? Like Enola is touted for like a, you know, ridiculously crazy like 20-step combo to win the game, but like really the first like 12 or 13 steps are just setting up the actual combo that's going to win the game, whereas Magda's trying to do the same thing, right? Get some treasures, make some treasures, get an artifact dwarf, get this Clock of Omens thing, and then just kind of from there, like, piece together and set up the actual way that you plan to win the game.
Similar to Enola, Magda also runs a Rube Goldberg line. Personally, I'll be honest, I have never needed to use it. I appreciate the hell out of someone knowing about it. You're using a curse mirror that copies a mirror of the Forebear's copy of Magda. So you're copying the copy to make it an artifact creature, and you're kind of looping those pieces around and around. The whole Rube Goldberg combo takes up the entire page of my browser. And there's a lot of homework and required reading that is easier to read than explain on a podcast, because I could be talking for an hour and like I would be doing the equivalent of reading Wikipedia entries. The content is there on the Clockside Outlaw Primer, and it's a fantastic resource if you're looking to get into the intricacies of this deck. If you enjoy this overview, you want to pilot the deck, I would say absolutely go for it. And if the deck is for you and you want to say, I want to take this to a tournament, definitely go into this primer, go into the extra resources with the Time is Money list. The Red Love Discord has a bunch of resources there too. You know, shout outs to everyone. There's a bunch of homework that you can be doing to get better at this deck specifically.
Yeah, this deck definitely has, I mean, it's mono red, right? So there's a lot of, there's a lot of interesting like flex slots, right? There's different lines you can take to succumb to the conclusion. So this is Y's take on it, and how he's piloting the deck list. So we're going to focus on that, but definitely go in and take a look, because there's a ton of different ways to achieve the actual victory. So you kind of do get to pick your favorite as to which one you feel is the best for you. But the critical piece of it is it all starts with assembling Magda, Clock of Omens, and an Artifact Dwarf to assemble that capability there. So it's a little unique and lets you kind of play the cards that maybe you're a fan favorite of or feel is a little better overall, but really cool stuff there.
Don't forget, by the rules of the color pie, red is the color of passion, and everyone is hella passionate about playing this deck.
Yeah. I know we talked about a lot of cards coming in, but I think like the first interesting piece I wanted to touch through, if there's any more we wanted to add, and we can go through these quick if we talked a lot about them, is the dwarves, right? They're kind of the bread and butter to what the deck can be. Are they all just really bad? Is there any that have sort of additional purposes that are cool, or is it just strictly like they're one mana, one one that get me Magda triggers?
That's all I need them to be. Sometimes they have bonus text, and that's really cool. The best one mana dwarf I play is actually Spark Mage. One mana, one one. When Spark Mage hits an opponent, you can also deal one damage to a creature they control. So if they go turn one Birds of Paradise or Noble Hierarch, and you do turn one Spark Mage, you, ladies and gentlemen, we got them.
We bolted the bird.
It has happened once, and that's all I needed it to do.
It's what matters most.
Honorary Dwarf Ragavan. It does the same thing that Magda does. Magda needs a two-card combo to do what Ragavan does printed on the card.
I like Bloodfire Dwarf, too. I think that's another dwarf that might have more than just one mana, one one printed on it. That's some neat things.
Yeah, that one's really good against specifically Najeela, because it destroys all the warrior tokens in play. It just removes all their tempo.
You're on, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 dwarves? 8 non-artifact dwarves, just basic 1-1, vanilla 1-1 dwarves that kind of do its thing. So it seems like there's a decent amount of triggers there.
Secretly, you can add one to that because I have a Mutavault in the land slot.
Oh, okay, cool. I didn't get there. But yeah, that's definitely there. Looking at the metal doors now, right? The next evolution to get this combo online. Any standouts there? I know we have some good stuff like Universal Automaton. I think you mentioned Metallic Mimic was the best one for you. I think there's a few more in there. Are they just basically serving the same purpose as being a metal dwarf?
Yes, they do cost a little bit more, except for Universal Automaton, because he is the best one. Right now, I'm on 4 total additional metal dwarves, because they are the combo package in one card that you need. I want to try to minimize the number of 2 and 3 mana sorcery speed things I'm on, right? Because I don't want the deck to be clunky. Magda has so much synergy, but it's possible to be too synergistic and lose out on tempo and just like playing good cards. You already have to make a couple of concessions just by, you know, playing 1 mana 1/1s, right? So there's a line between synergy and consistency and then being impactful in a high power environment, right? Right now, I am on Adaptive Automaton, Bloodline Pretender, Metallic Mimic, and Universal Automaton is my artifact dwarves, and the other stuff, there are further changelings that cost like 2 and 3 mana that I am not currently on, just because I don't think I need that many of them to do what I want to do.
Yeah, you're definitely, that's a strong point in this deck. Like, as we're talking about these dwarves and kind of poking fun at them, your average card quality that you could possibly top deck or draw or have in your hand in this deck is significantly worse than something like a blue farm deck, right? That's just playing all like the staple best cards in CEDH, right? So you're definitely more focused on the synergies and trying to be balanced, being able to play in the pod too, so...
Your worst situation to be in with Magda is being in a mid to late game top deck situation with very few treasures already in play. Because if you're trying to rebuild, your average top deck in terms of card quality is not as strong as other decks. Kind of like how Yuriko is. I feel like that's a common issue with Yuriko. Although Yuriko tends to keep their hand a little bit more full on average. Just like drawing your random draft common ninja, right, in the late game isn't doing a whole lot to help you. Same thing with Magda. If you're drawing a Spark Mage on turn 5 and your hand is empty and they countered your Wheel of Fortune, well, you know, your chances are not looking very good in that particular game.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so now we've talked about the dwarves, we talked about the metal dwarves. I know we mentioned at length that this deck does not fully need combat to happen. So what are some of the interesting and powerful ways to tap these dwarves to generate these treasures in the deck?
We mentioned before Springleaf Drum, Paradise Mantle. Those are pretty clean options. In the land slot, we have both Holdout Settlement and Survivor's Encampment. They do the same thing. They are colorless sources, but they also can tap for any color as long as you also tap a creature. So we're playing a rainbow land in our monocolor deck, because it can tap our dwarves outside of combat. It's really cool. People will read the card every time. And that's another charm of playing this deck, is that people will always read your cards. If you are the type of person who really likes to share the cool brew that they make, you will be turning them facing your opponent more often than not. Another really clean answer to the Magda question are vehicles. And we just got a bunch of new ones in Kamigawa Niwan. Oh my god. And we just got a bunch
of new ones. We'll be right back.
No. See, now I had it that time and you ruined it.
Yeah, you fudged it up.
Bastard. Good. I'm glad. This is what I'm here for.
You know what? You say. All right. You want to say things? You can tell us.
I will.
What's the set with vehicles, Corey?
Kamigawa Neon Dynasty.
Cool. Now say Ashnod's Transmogrant.
Ashnod's Transmogrant.
Okay. He's ascended.
I cannot be stopped right now. I got my teeth in. We are good to go. I'm giving y'all high definition S's. Let's go.
The reason that we're playing vehicles is because the crew mechanic is able to be done excessively. Even if the vehicle is already a creature that turn, you can keep putting dwarves into it. It is like a little kind of clown car thing if you're not familiar with the ruling. So yeah, you can put as many dwarves into a vehicle as you want. So I am running vehicles with crew 1. This is where the first line of Magda actually becomes relevant. Your other dwarves get +1/+0. So almost all of your dwarves are 2 power with Magda in play. So you can actually play crew 2 vehicles the same way you can with crew one vehicles in this deck, which is pretty cool. It just gives you a wider card pool to pick from as far as what's in your deck. I'm currently on what I feel are the two best vehicles, which are Smuggler's Copter and High Speed Hover Bike. The Copter, because I can be filtering cards. I mean, this card was a menace in Standard for a reason. And High Speed Hover Bike, because it actually has defensive utility in a vehicle. It has relevant text when you're not doing Magda things. It does have flash, and when it ETBs, it can tap a creature. So maybe, like, I don't know, maybe you'll get someone by, like, tapping their Chrom or, like, tapping an Ishai with a bunch of counters on it. That'd be really cool. So, yeah, the Hover Bike and the Copter, those are, like, repeatable sources of tapping for Magda triggers. Another piece that's kind of, it's more in the stacks column, but it's worth mentioning, Tanglewire. If you are doing a game plan that you want that early stacks piece on your first Magda Tutor, but you feel like you want to win in another turn or two after that, Tanglewire is the card that you want. This is the classic option that's been, as far as I've been familiar with it, it's been the first thing in the primer that people go for. It will keep your opponents locked down, and the things you tap can be generating treasure tokens as you're tapping them. So Tanglewire is a fantastic piece in terms of stacks utility and also the synergy with Magda.
I like that a lot. I like how you can just kind of pull it out and just be like, yep, this is what we're doing now. One of the questions that I personally had on the vehicles aspect is Unlicensed Hearse. No thoughts on that one?
I think the deck very well could be on it. I'm at the point with my list that, I don't know, maybe I'm just like kind of a boomer or something with this list, because I've been on it since like literally like a month or two after call time. But it's very hard for me to make cuts in my current list, and I think the deck could use a third vehicle, I'll be honest with you. I think some people are already on three or even four vehicles in their lists. They have a really explosive upside. If you have a handful of dwarves, it lets you capitalize on that, even if there's blockers in play. And I think that's very important with Magda, is being able to utilize those one mana dwarves that you have, because if you're not getting value, then they're all dead draws, right? And vehicles ensure that they're always relevant draws for you. More vehicles could be good. I think Unlicensed Hearse is a very strong option, right? It's seeing play in Legacy sideboards now. So we can see that the card is powerful. It's been tested, and, you know, maybe I wouldn't call it a late game threat. I would call it more, in the context of CEDH at least, I would call it more of like a strong mid to late game blocker, though, and that could be really helpful to have. So, yeah, the Hearse has a lot of potential to it, and I think that there is a cut in my list for it. I think for the sake of this conversation, it's like a 101st card for me, and probably by the time this gets uploaded, I'll take another look and probably just throw it in the deck. So, yeah, let's just say I'm running it.
We got that.
We got there.
Good job, everyone.
I have two cards that I think one card is very unique to your deck, and the other one, as I know, is the newest edition that I wanted to talk about. What's Wild Magic Surge doing in the deck? That seems like a brand new, interesting card for the deck list. And then the other card that I would want you to talk about is Sticky Fingers. I think that one is a tech that you found. I don't think anybody else is really utilizing that one there either.
Yeah, I think those are both worth talking about, because they're two very new printings. They are a little bit obscure, and I would certainly acknowledge that they are both flex slots in the deck. I wouldn't say either is necessary. These are definitely two cards that I'm testing out. In terms of being in the column of this is a card I am currently testing, you pretty much picked out the two on top of that list for me. Wild Magic Surge is essentially another copy of Chaos Warp for the targets I want to put in it. Mono red, typically not good at answering enchantments in play. Your Null Rods, your Stony Silences, Rule of Law in some cases. There's a lot of pieces that might get in your way that, being mono red, is hard to answer. You are running a copy of Spine of Ish-Saw, which is tutorable with Magda to remove a problem permanent, specifically an enchantment. That's like the one you're going to have the most problems with, like I said. Wild Magic Surge is ideally another defensive response to something that would get in your way from comboing. I don't know specifically how many removal spells I want to be on right now, because I already cut Thunderclap, which I'm not certain on if that's the right choice or not. I don't know if I want to put that back in, but again, there's like a bunch of moving parts in this deck, and you're running all these dwarves, and you have to make cuts somewhere. So you're already on, you know, Pyroblast, Reb, Tybalt's Trickery, Deflecting, SWAT. So there's a lot of response-based cards that you like that are clearly the best for the slots that you have open. So the question remains, how many do you have remaining after that? I could be on more dwarves. I could be on more vehicles. I could be on more of these removal spells, like I mentioned. The question is what I want to be on more of, and I think that's responsive to your meta in a lot of cases, because there's a lot of directions you can go. So that kind of wraps up Wild Magic Surge. And in regards to Sticky Fingers, this is just another dwarf effect, right? When it tags an opponent, you make a treasure. It's got some extra text on it too, which is nice. Ideally, you're just going to put Sticky Fingers on your Magda, because it fills the goal of making, like I said, additional treasures. It makes Magda more difficult to block. Sometimes with like your one mana dwarves, you're okay with cashing them in, trading them in combat, as long as you get a treasure out of it. With Magda, obviously, you prefer not to lose that one, because recasting it gets in the way of your combo. So Magda gives it menace, so it makes it more difficult to block. It gets through for treasures. And if the enchanted creature does die, you get to draw a card, so it can replace itself. And oh, and it also costs one for people not familiar, so it's a low opportunity cost. It's the same opportunity cost as one of your other dwarves that you're already running, but playing this on your commander has better upside in most cases versus playing a regular dwarf.
There's two primers currently sitting on the decklist database. I believe Clockside Outlaw and Time is Money are the names of them. I know both of those, like, for example, one of the cards they're on is a 3-mana Dwarven Blood something. I can't remember the name of the card off the top of my head. It's a 3/3.
Oh, I think Dwarven Blood Boiler.
That's it.
Dwarven Blood Boiler. Yep.
It lets you tap them. You've currently not running that. Is that new tech that you haven't tested yet? Is that a tech that's you're not a fan of? What's the thoughts there on that?
That is classic tech. I have always seen it in either the main board or the considering pile of every list I've seen when I was starting to build the deck. It fills a role similar to the vehicles, where you can tap as many dwarves as you would like to its ability. So it's recurable treasures for as many dwarves as you have in play each turn cycle. And I think that's very powerful. The reason I am not on it is because its mana cost is a little bit prohibitive. And yes, its cost is red, red, red in the mono red deck. However, you are on a lot of artifact mana in this deck, and red mana is your bottleneck. I know we just covered Kirk, where black mana was the bottleneck, right? You have, in some cases, an excess of colorless mana sources, and you can't make enough red pips to cast your hand. So that's a position that I would like to try to minimize, because in my playtesting, that has been a common stranglehold on my play patterns, is not having enough red sources.
The next big one, I guess the big elephant, or one might say dragon in the room, is most of the primers are on at least one. Some of them are on two dragons, because Magda does tutor dragons as well. You've elected to not play either. Do you want to walk through that reasoning?
Yeah, definitely. So if you go into the Red Love Discord, I will shout it out again. Why not, right? So the Red Love Discord is pretty much, it seems like unanimously, or at least like in heavy majority of running at least Yudvara Hellkite. It's kind of the new tech I think people are on right now, and I think there's a very good reason to be. Yudvara Hellkite says that, I mean, it's a big dragon, right? I don't need to say much more, right? It's a big dragon, you can tutor it with Magda, and whenever a dragon you control attacks, you make a 6/6 dragon token. And with Maskwood Nexus, or in some cases your existing changelings like Universal Automaton, Mutavault, like we've discussed before, with Maskwood Nexus, you have a really cool combo that you can make a bunch of dragon tokens. It really stomps any boards that are really stacked out against you. It's a great answer to Nullrod. I don't know, I think that's kind of the summary of what it is. It's not an infinite combo per se, it doesn't need to be. It's just like a really strong game finishing haymaker that you don't see in a lot of CDH nowadays, right? But it's like, when you're in a lockdown board position, when there's stacks against you, when there's stacks against the whole table, the Hellkite gets there.
That's where I see the card, right? If you're if you're playing against, you know, two Null Rods and a Collector Oof, you can just make five treasures, sack them to Magda, get the Hellkite, and now you have the scariest board, right? You're turning out 6/6 flying dragons that make more flying 6/6 dragons, right? It's doing like a Nigella almost, right? Where it's like doubling the amount of dragons and just snowballing out of control there.
Nigella times 6 in terms of the power you're putting out, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I think it's really cool. It's something that I initially scoffed at. And, you know, like the fool that I am, right? And now I'm looking at it again. I'm like, yeah, I probably should just like throw it in the deck and play test it at this point, because like I see the merit to it, right? It's just I've got my thing with my decks that I like making them personal, and you know, change is hard. And I think this is a good learning tool for every Magic player, every competitive Magic player out there. There's nothing wrong with playing cards that you like. And at the end of the day, if you are playing to win, you have to see what is best. And I have an art degree. I have, you know, feelers in that end of the world too. And the most important tool in being a good artist, a good teacher, a good Magic player is knowing when your shit's wrong and taking advice from people who've done the homework. And I think Hellkite, Maskwood Nexus might be that kind of situation for me. I think I need to take my medicine on that and play the cards and at least give them credit and put them in my deck and run games with them and see how it plays out for me, because I think it just might be like actually really good.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting, right? You as Magic players, you know, you want to have your own innovative deck, which is absolutely great. And you know, we that's what we're doing here, right? We're showcasing our brews and our versions of the deck lists that we've had success with. And we like, but that doesn't mean that it's the end all, and that there's definitely a hive mind out there, right? Lots of people are playing the deck and piloting and showcasing their own thoughts and opinions. And that's what we want to see you guys do as our listeners is, you know, if this deck excites you and it's something you want to do, absolutely check out Wise deck list in the link below. But then don't be afraid to tweak the numbers to better suit your play style or your play group or whatever you need to do. Or if you see that, you know, you want to try that, definitely give that a go and see where that comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's easy to get into the mindset of, ah, I'm wrong. Oh no, I'm a failure. But like, instead you can reframe that as like, I'm really glad someone shared this with me, because now I get to play a stronger deck. There's no rule that says you can't make this new version yours as well.
Absolutely. Okay, so continuing on, there's probably about 2-ish more cards I know that I definitely wanted to ask you about. One of the cards that I'm a big fan of, I know that one, I think only one of the decks is piloting this, but none of them are, is Stoke the Flames. I was playing Standard at the time when that card was illegal, and that card just feels so good in this deck. Like, make 4 treasures and kill a Krom. Like, that card seems great. What are your thoughts on that card overall?
That's a great segue. Magda was recently on an episode of Playing with Power. Garner was on the list, I believe. And his combo turn was literally, in my opinion, the ceiling of Stoke the Flames. There has never been a better recorded example of how good Stoke the Flames could be until that video. So it's perfect for people to see why you would be on it, because it has Convoke, and being short on mana on your combo turn, you need a removal spell for a problem permanent, such as like an Aven Mind Sensor or an Opposition Agent or a Collector Oof, something along those lines. Stoke the Flames is the perfect card to have. In the place of that, I was on Thunderclap, because again, it's another free removal spell. Even with Convoke, I feel that the cost is still a little bit too restrictive. I maintain that I'm happier to be on things like Thunderclap or even like Mind Collapse or Pyrokinesis, Fury. There's a lot of free red removal that you jump through fewer hoops to cast than even Stoke the Flames. I think it's an awesome card that exists out there, and it's like super awesome with Magda because Convoke can trigger Magda, right? But that being said, I think there just are other options that I think do the job a little bit better, just because Pyrokinesis costs 0 mana instead of convoking.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I guess the final card in the comparisons discussion that I wanted to talk about is I know only one of the decks is on it now, but there was a big push back in the day for Academy Manufacturer. I think it was part of the cornerstone of like one of the crazy combos that was in the deck list. I know you were never a fan of it, but I see some people are kind of moving away from it. What's the pros and cons of playing a card like that into the deck list? Because I know it gives unbounded untapped treasures, which is really cool.
I am a fan of it. It's just never been good enough for me to run it in the deck. I think I had it in there for a week or two, and then I'm just like, yeah, this isn't doing anything exceptional that I wasn't already kind of doing. It isn't the combo turn where Academy Manufacturer shines. It's kind of like, in my playtesting, it was the mid game, because being able to explode with clue tokens, getting card draw off of that, it was a big factor in some of the games. It just came down to being a flex slot. It wasn't a card that was directly winning me the game. And card draw off of my treasure enablers wasn't exactly where I was wanting to be. I was ending up with a lot of clue tokens that I wasn't cracking because I needed the mana elsewhere on each turn cycle. I think it's a great card. And as far as the combo turn is concerned, I feel that it's still a little bit in the win more category for me, because you can go off in 99% of situations with the tapped treasures with a traditional grinding station line. So the manufacturer kind of felt unnecessary. I think there's a specific instance where Academy Manufacturer gets you there, but you can say that about a lot of combo decks, and a lot of combo decks aren't running so many concessions in their deck building to make every single opportunity work for them. For every, you know, 1 in 100 games that the manufacturer wins a game that otherwise wouldn't win, there's other cards that give you a higher percentage of return on investment.
Yeah, and that's a strong concept, I think, from at least from my neck of the woods in the Storm kind of turbo community, right? We're just trying to be as lean as possible, right? Some of the times we go a little too lean, but we're just trying to cut, you know, clunky cards. We already talked about how this deck doesn't draw exceptionally well, right? You're not drawing banger after banger after banger. You're drawing one mana one ones. So, you know, sometimes drawing an Academy Manufacturer is just kind of like a three mana do nothing card that in a format where you need to be a little more interactive most of the time. So
it's also a bit rough when you're behind, and you certainly run enough cards that already put you in that position without running additional ones.
Correct. Yeah. So if you can shave down stuff like that, it's always better to do that when you're brewing into thinking through these types of deck lists. I think that kind of is another interesting point on the Hellkite too, right? Now that's a pros and cons, because it technically beats a lot of what like these null rod style effects that you're trying to do. So you kind of got to weigh that a lot when you're building your deck list, as to, you know, this is a kind of clunky dead card, but it's gonna, for more often than not, it'll serve a purpose for these games that I suspect will be pretty hot and heavy in comparison there. So
it just comes down to the harsh reality of playing Magda, that for all the cool and unique things that it does do, you are running a lot of cards that are very bad in a vacuum on their own. You have to run all the one mana doors for the deck to function as a Magda deck. So the flex slots that are not those one mana doors, I feel like they really need to be efficient at what they do. And Manufacturer is good in a synergistic setting, but I'm trying to find cards that are stronger in a vacuum to make up for the fact that we play Dwarven Trader.
So with that kind of being the case, one of the last things I wanted to talk through before we move on to kind of looking at the hands is I know Magda has had some success in tournament settings. I believe if people remember back in earlier this year, 2022, they held a Marchesa CEDH event. Koibito ended up winning the whole list. So I think that was a strong purpose to put Magda on the map. Any takeaways or anything from that list or from that event that really you wanted to talk about or that sparked your interest? It was a dominating run, right? He went, I think, 7-0. Like, he didn't even lose a game.
Yeah, undefeated.
Undefeated through the day. So, you know, all through Swiss quarters or semis and finals, he ended up winning the whole kit and caboodle. So that was a pretty cool kind of stamp for the power level of how this deck can play in certain pods.
Yeah, it was super satisfying to hear that news, right? At the same time, it's like, uh-oh, the secret's out now, right? People know the deck is good. Part of, at least early Magda lists, part of the strength of Magda was your opponents not taking it seriously. that is definitely a trend with the decks that I tend to bring to competitive settings, is that I don't necessarily throw up the red flags that other decks might. And now Magda is one of those problem decks that people are aware of. So yeah, you have, again, now you're bringing in the social factor into the tournament setting. People know how good Magda is. It's no longer this fringe deck. And I think people's play patterns have adjusted accordingly, and they will continue to do so. You can't just get away with combos getting over their head and them not responding to you properly, because at least someone at your table probably is going to know what's up and tell the table.
All right, so now that we've kind of talked through that, let's get into everybody's favorite segment. Let's talk about some hands, some mulliganing decisions with this deck. I'm going in, I would presume that this deck mulligans pretty aggressively. I'm assuming you want some early dwarves, and you don't want to be casting, you want to cast Magda as early as possible. So I think that's where we'll be with hands, but let's find out.
There's a bit more nuance with what you just said, Cypher. Turn one Magda is really cool, and that's something that will probably keep a hand that can do that. That being said, it is just as good to go turn one dwarf, turn two Magda, go to combat. Either way, you're making a treasure that combat step on turn two. You just want to be making a treasure on turn two some way, shape, or form. And casting Magda on turn one or turn two can accomplish that.
Yeah, it feels like the dwarf on one, Magda on two is the better line, is the happier line for you, because it leads to what, two treasures on three versus, you know, consistently just one treasure there. But I mean, we take what we can get, right?
Yeah, of course.
So with that being the case, looking at this first hand here, we have for lands, we have an Ancient Tomb and a Buried Ruin and a Prismatic Vista. We have a Paradise Mantle. We have a Dwarven Grunt. We have a Dockside Extortionist, and we have a Cloudstone Curio.
Wow. Well, this hand is a snap keep. I would snap keep this on a six. How about that? I would snap keep this on a five.
Yeah, because you just have the combo right there.
This is like the weird combo, though, right? It kind of wasn't worth mentioning, but now that it's in our opener, right? Wow, there's this little card called Doxa Extortionist. Quirk, would you like to read it?
it's everybody's favorite Goblin Pirate. It's one
you,
in a
you
red.
You don't have to read it. You knew it was in here. We're playing a mono red deck. Everyone should know that there was a Dockside in here. This is, I mean, given the highest ceiling of Dockside, this is one of the best Dockside Extortionist decks in all of CEDH, because, yeah, you don't need any other pieces other than Dockside and your commander. If Dockside is X equals 5, you can probably just win off of that in this deck. So, yeah. Dockside makes things a lot better, and you're running a lot of Goblin Tutors to make that happen in an average game as well. Also, we see in this hand is Cloudstone Curio. We don't really have any specific combos with it, except with Dockside. How convenient. Because you're just trying to seesaw your creatures. Like I said, you're running a lot of one-mana dwarves. The best thing to have with a Cloudstone Curio and a Dockside. So you have a really lean Cloudstone combo. If you have the Dockside in hand, Magda can be tutoring for the Cloudstone. As you can see, you have both in your opener. So we have like the weird Plan B combo fully assembled in our hand with an Ancient Tomb as well and a Paradise Mantle as well. So you have a lot of ramp to get there. Let's map out how this turn cycle goes. The question is if you do Ancient Tomb or Basic Mound on turn one, because you're either casting the Grunt or you're casting the Paradise Mantle. I guess you just cast the Grunt on turn one with the Paradise Mantle. You can't equip on turn one, though, but that's going to have to be what it is, right?
Yeah, but you can do it off of the Tomb on the next turn or the Buried Ruin, right? Whatever you
Yeah, follow. So turn one, it's just like Vista for Mountain, play the Grunt, cast Mantle, because that's free to cast. In a good situation, right, you can win on turn two with the Dockside trigger if it's for enough treasures.
So wouldn't the play actually be to hold the Dwarven Grunt to potentially combo on turn two?
I think it depends on what your pod is. If you're seeing decks that are going to trigger Dockside for enough treasure, then I think holding it could be a good option. Don't forget, you can also trigger the Cloudstone Curio off casting your commander here. So if you're banking on them having a good number of turn one artifacts and enchantments, then yeah, just lean into the turn two Dockside and keep your one mana dwarf in hand. If you're not sure, then you would just play the dwarf, because if you don't have the win on turn two, then you can still do Magda on two, make a treasure in combat, and then turn three go for the win.
You can do that, right? Like you can go Dwarven Grunt, Paradise Mantle, next turn Ancient Tomb, cast Magda, equip the mantle to the grunt, and then tap the grunt or tap the grunt for a mana, and then make two treasures, right? And then you're back up to two, and then you can like cast your Dockside, and you know.
Yeah, you do have everything. If you do that though, you don't have a creature to bounce Curio with.
We're also not playing with, we're not also drawing extra cards though, right? Like there's a chance you could draw something like that. That line feels the most like open to pivot, right? Like if, because then like if you're setting yourself up to win turn two and nobody plays any form of like artifacts for whatever reason, or like there's like one or two, it's like, okay, well, that's not enough.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, in some world where you're not just winning here, you can just like use your Magda trigger and just fetch up, I don't know, Tanglewire, Godfarer Statue, just whatever piece hurts them the most, and then you're just like, you're just miles ahead at that point, and then your second Magda trigger will win you the game. I think this is completely safe.
Our next hand here, we have four lands, we have two mountains, we have actually this brings up a great question. We're gonna pause hands. What's the mountain art of choice for your deck?
I have FBB Japanese mountains that I got just for Magda. I think that if you are playing a deck with, you know, a dozen basic mountains, then you should show up with the one that speaks to you the most. I think everyone's got their thing with that. I am not made of money. I'm not running gurus, but I hope someone out there is.
See, I'd be the heathen to run all mismatched mountains just because.
Yeah, that's why I didn't ask
like
you.
Stick your hand in like the draft chaff at your local shop.
Oh no, I would make sure that each one of them was a different art.
You would go out of your way. You wouldn't even just pick randomly. You would go out of your way to ensure, to curate that it's the most frustrating experience to look at.
Absolutely. Have you seen my Curic deck?
Yeah, that's a Stax player mana base if I've ever seen one. Even when you're not playing Stax, like in form, you are like in spirit.
Mental Stax.
That's exactly why in this episode I went, why? What kind of mountains are you playing? And when we did Curic, I wasn't like, what kind of swamps are you playing? I didn't want to know. All right, so getting back to the hand, this hand has two mountains, a Cavern of Souls, a Jeweled Lotus, a Springleaf Drum, a Sticky Fingers, and a Spark Mage.
This is a very fun hand. It's very versatile, too. You definitely are relying on your next two draw steps to see how strong this hand can be, but you have such a strong base with this hand, and this is like the clear choice of what you do on turn one, right? Is Cavern on Dwarf, cast your Spark Mage, crack your Jewel Lotus, cast your Magda. That's one thing you can do. But this hand, the Jewel Lotus plays around removal so well with this deck. You can also do a turn one Spark Mage and a turn two Cavern uncounterable Magda and just hold on to the Jewel Lotus in case they have removal. This is a hand that like potentially can use Jewel Lotus defensively, which is a really weird thing to say. You can certainly just go fast though and drop two dwarves on turn one, which I assume is the more correct option of the two, but just the fact that you can do that is really interesting.
I was going to say, like, this is really weird, and I'm going to probably spend 10 minutes phrasing this. It's such a simple question, but like Jeweled Lotus to me in this deck, like it's good because you want to power out Magda as early as humanly possible. And, you know, having two triggers on turn two is way better than one trigger on turn two. But like, I don't, it like, it doesn't feel the same to me as like when you're like, yeah, I'm going to cast Jeweled Lotus, crack it and cast like a Krom or a Tevish or an Ajila or like a Kenry, you know, any of that kind of stuff. It feels like the Jeweled Lotus really helps serve the duty of like, oh, you've killed my Magda, it costs a fortune now. I'm just going to play this Jeweled Lotus and make it not cost a fortune anymore.
Yeah, that is nice. I mean, the plan A through J with Jewel Lotus is the turn one Magda, right? I'm not gonna try to like make it more complicated than it is. It really is just there as like another ritual effect to get your Magda out as fast as possible. What is nice about this hand is that you don't need the Magda in play on turn one because you do have Springleaf Drum in hand. So even if you're casting Magda on turn two, you can still be tapping it for a treasure on turn two with Summoning Sickness. So you could certainly just like turn one Spark Mage and then figure out your turn two next turn. You don't lose a treasure by waiting a turn.
I like definitely going Cavern Spark Mage, and I probably want to go Magda on one because I really like the idea of suiting up a Spark Mage with a Sticky Fingers to give that thing menace and then just start bolting birds that they can't block with.
Yeah, that actually that is a great point, Cypher, is like If you see a deck that's playing Mana Dorks, then Sticky Fingers Spark Mage is backbreaking for them in so many cases.
And then, like, worst case scenario, if that later on, if they have a removal for it, like, you get to draw a card too, which is kind of cool. Neat card.
Yeah, like, cool, remove my Spark Mage. My commander stays in play, please.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think I would keep this. I think this is fine.
Their previous hand is, like, more explosive and, like, game-winning, right? But, like, this is still a very good keepable hand.
That was very interesting. That was, I think that was our first, like, back-to-back first seven keeps. That's kind of cool.
Maybe, yeah.
Someone can check me on that, but I don't remember ever doing that. Cool. Our next seven, fresh hand here, we have Wooded Foothills, Sokazen, Crucible of Defiance. For creatures, we have a Dwarven Armorer, relevant text. We have a Mana Crypt, a Grinding Station, a Cloudstone Curio, and a God Pharaoh Statue.
You two talk about this one. I'm going to gather my thoughts. I want to hear what you think about it.
It's interesting because, like, you have the early, like, turn one Magda and you have, like, the dwarf. But, like, as a first seven, I would probably mull because, like, you're already technically down to, like, six or five. Because, like, the God Pharaoh statue is, like, kind of dead in your hand. And, like, you don't really want to cast Grinding Station. So, like, I feel like you kind of want to mull this because, like, you just get so much better off of a second seven. Which is weird to say because, like, you already have, like, the turn one Magda and the turn one Magda or, like, the turn one dwarf into turn two Magda, guaranteed. But, like, we talked about, like, how, like, the density of the deck is so bad to, like, potentially draw. Like, the rest of the hand is just so kind of clunky and, like, ugh.
I'm definitely mulliganing this one. I could see where it's kind of like a trap hand, so to speak. Where it's like, oh man, I get to turn one Magda or do a bunch of things at the same time. Like, sure, there's definitely a world where you would have Foothills for a basic mountain, play a Dwarven Armor, play a Mana Crypt, play a Grinding Station, and you call it a day, and you go, okay, that's cool. But, like, it doesn't do anything past that, because you're then potentially winning on as early as turn four or five, depending on everybody else.
So I've gathered. Thanks for your input, though. I think those are two very good points that you're making. I am agreeing with both of you. I would ship this hand, but I want to mention how close this is for me to snap keep it for my personal preferences. If you had a colored source of fast mana, or if you had, I guess, if God Pharaoh Statue cost one less, right? I would keep this hand in a heartbeat if I could God Pharaoh Statue on turn two, because your turn one can be a red land and a Mana Crypt and a Magda. Turn two, you can be tapping the Magda, you make a treasure, you play your second land, which is mana number four, right? So you have Mana Crypt, two lands, and a treasure on turn two. You have five mana available. You are one shy of casting God Pharaoh Statue on two. If you resolve a turn two God Pharaoh Statue, you are in such a good spot in your game, I feel. But unfortunately, we are one shy. If there's, like, literally like a Mox Diamond in this hand that you could do Magda and Dwarven Armorer on turn one, then you would get there. But as it stands, I agree. I would ship it.
All right. Looking at second seven, we have four lands. We have an Ancient Tomb, a basic mountain. For creatures, we have a Bloodfire Dwarf. And for all the others, Rist, we have a Springleaf Drum, a Tybalt Trickery, a Wheel of Fortune, and God Pharaoh Statue shows up again.
I feel like this one is dependent on turn order, because you do have that turn two fast Wheel of Fortune hand. You could be, you know, you could be dumping some cards out and then wheeling and then getting more advantage than your opponents. So that's like a line you could be playing. Like, if you're last in turn order, maybe this is what you stick with. I think you're not quite there in terms of explosiveness. You really only have the Ancient Tomb as far as fast acceleration, because the Springleaf Drum does need some setup. Especially with the God Pharaoh Statue here, you're already looking only at six cards that are relevant to you. So yeah, I would probably go down to... Oh, this is second seven, right? I would be going down to six in a heartbeat.
Yep, yeah, I think I agree. Again, you're already... Like, the God Pharaoh Statue already puts you on six, and looking at this six, I'm like, it's fine. And like you said, like, turn two Wheel of Fortune's okay, but, like, it depends on where you are in seating, because, like, if you're in fourth seat, that's giving everybody basically, like, two turns to deploy their hands before you wheel, so, like... Most people be like, yeah, I have like two or three cards in my hand anyways. Like, I love to draw seven cards. Thanks. Like, so it's just kind of rough.
And again, we see that like Universal Automaton continues to be the best one mana dwarf in this deck, because that would have made this hand so much better. You do Ancient Tomb, turn one Automaton Springleaf Drum, and then into a Bloodfire Dwarf. How good does that make this hand?
Yeah, because you hit Tomb and let you, yeah, that's crazy.
Changes right, like, yeah, right. Universal Automaton completely flips this hand on its head if we had it.
All right, going down to six. Our six-card hand is a Urza's Saga as our lone land. When we have a Paradise Mantle, a Spine of Ishshaw, a Deflecting Swat, a Grinding Station, an Imperial Recruiter, and a Mirror of the Forebearers.
Saga doesn't get us there, unfortunately. So five it is.
All right, our five-card hand, we have a Mountain. We have a Liberated Dwarf. We have a Chrome Mox, we have a Red Elemental Blast, a Wheel of Misfortune, a Wild Magic Surge, and a Tangle Wire.
Yeah, I clap a little bit for this one, but like I'm on push to talk, so I can only do so much. Yeah, this is a perfectly fine five. I'm happy to be on this one.
What are you putting back? Are you putting back, is it Wild Magic Surge and like Tangle Wire?
Yeah, so I like mulliganing the Tangle Wire or any Magda fetch for that matter, just because you're happy to tutor it up instead when you need it. Also, you need a density of red cards because you have a Chrome Mox in hand. Given the fact that you're pitching something to Chrome Mox, you're looking to keep your worst red card in hand to pitch to that, ideally. But yeah, Tangle Wire goes to the bottom. Seeing that you are going down to a five card hand and pitching to Chrome Mox, you probably want to be casting Wheel of Misfortune if you can. So, yeah, the pitch is probably Wild Magic Surge, because you're down to a five-card hand. You're not in the business of responding to things at this point. You're just trying to get your own game plan online as best you can.
Because, like, obviously the red or the Wild Magic's getting pitched to the Mox, and I feel like later on down the line, I would rather have access to a Wild Magic Surge than a Red Blast. I mean, pod-dependent, of course, but just generally, I think I'd rather have access to that to kill a permanent than have to, because I'm this hand so far, I'm trying to rebuild, right? So I'm playing very, very aggressive with my mana, I think, in the first couple of turns, because it's like Mountain, yeah. Chrome Mox, Pitch Blast, cast either Magda, or I'd probably maybe even just drop the Dwarf out just to have the ability, like you said, if I draw a land, to be able to just like either slam Magda on two or cast the Wheel and try and get draw some cards.
I really like turn one Liberated Dwarf, because like I mentioned before, turn one Dwarf, turn two Magda, or turn one Magda, turn two attack, you still get one treasure on turn two either way. If you do turn one Liberated Dwarf, then you can see two draw steps to hopefully find another Mountain or something like that to be able to cast Magda without using Chrome Mox. Because if you're able to do that, you can be setting up a hand where you're able to Wheel of Misfortune with Reb to protect it, which I think you really need this wheel to resolve to have a good game in this current hand.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, let's do one more, I think.
This is a good one to clean up with. Okay.
Yeah, so our last hand of the day. We have a Mountain. We have a Blast Zone. We have a Soul Ring, a Metallic Mimic, a Simian Spirit Guide, a Bloodline Pretender, and a Memory Jar. So, like, outside of the Memory Jar, does this hand just have everything you want? It's got mana, it's got Artifact Dwarves.
It has your enabler, and I did mention that Memory Jar is the kill combo after you've Grinding Stationed your opponents out, but it's also a fetchable Wheel of Fortune for the purposes of getting your engine going when you need it. This is like a very fair Memory Jar play that you could be building toward, and you can see your hand is full of enablers and fast mana to get to them fast. So, yeah, the only question remains is your opening sequencing. Right, that's a big question to ask when you're playing Magda that I don't think I touched on, other than the fact that, you know, turn one Magda versus turn one any other dwarf is equivalent in most cases. You can see that we have a 2-mana artifact dwarf and a 3-mana artifact dwarf. You can go turn one Sol Ring into Metallic Mimic, or if you crack the Spirit Guide, you can go to Bloodline Pretender. But for the purposes of Magda, the Metallic Mimic is just as strong. So you may be better off holding on to the Simian Spirit Guide for a later turn. In this hand, I like Spirit Guide powering out a Memory Jar more than anything else. So I would go like turn one Metallic Mimic, turn two Magda, something along those lines. You have a lot of equivalent cards. So just knowing when it's worth burning your rituals on them versus not, I think is something that comes with age playing this deck.
I just think you want the Mimic down just because it makes my other dwarves bigger.
Yeah, Metallic Mimic first is pretty good. The fact that Bloodline Pretender can be like a 5/5 or whatever, Bloodline Pretender can be up to a 4/4 with your current cards, just looking at the text of it, but like having a 4/4 in play really isn't worth burning a Spirit Guide early, right? So I would just go with the Metallic Mimic to start.
Yeah, and either way you scope it, right? Like if you really wanted to, you can turn one Mimic or turn one Bloodline Pretender, but then the next turn you can follow up with both the Magda and potentially the other one. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, so you can follow up with either or, right? So you can go turn one Mimic into turn two Bloodline Magda, or you can go, you know, turn one Bloodline into turn two Metallic Magda.
It's notable that if this Sol Ring was a Mana Crypt, this would be an insane start. I mean, sorry, it's only a Sol Ring, but like...
Yeah, because Crypt would give you turn one Mimic into Magda, which is crazy. All right, so that's kind of looking at kind of the Magda hands and kind of what Magda's trying to do. Before we wrap up the show, just wanted to give Y one last chance to kind of talk through anything we may have missed or any final thoughts on Magda here before we wrap it up.
Yeah, I have a fun thought exercise for both of you because I want to talk through it. We mentioned that I do acknowledge I want to make some changes to my current list. I think I have a good baseline, but there's always cuts that I want to try out. There's a lot of flex slots that I think can be shifted around. The number one card that I want to be on is Possessed Portal. I need this thing in my deck. It has been the 101st card for as long as I can remember, and I need to play this card. It is literally in my Legacy deck, which also plays Magda. It's like the Magda Grist deck with the funky Changeling stuff. I will forward the listeners. Possessed Portal is... Oh, you went past it. You had it on the screen. I was going to read off yours. Come back. Good. Thank you. I just want to make sure I get the reading right. Possessed Portal is an absolutely huge card. It is an 8-mana artifact from 5th Dawn. The Oracle text is basically, players can't draw cards. That's like the scariest sentence in all of Magic. Just those four words, players can't draw cards under any circumstances, including the draw steps. So it puts the game on hold. It puts things in a little bit of a lock just with one card. Furthermore, during each end step, each player's end step, so it happens 4 times per turn cycle, each player either sacrifices a permanent or discards a card from their hand. So with Possessed Portal in play, the game slowly devolves and undoes itself until there's nothing really left. The owner of Possessed Portal, you can choose to sacrifice the Possessed Portal to its effect on end step when you feel like you've done enough with it, kind of similar to how Smokestacks operates. You can choose to end everyone's suffering as soon as you would like. But this is such a cool card when you get a little bit ahead, especially because you are running dwarves, which when tapped make a treasure token, which you can sacrifice that treasure token to Possessed Portal, so you can keep your head above water longer than everyone else and get so far ahead that you soft win the game from that. I think the card is insane, and I think it stops a lot of combo finishers as well. In response to something like Infinite Mana Thrasios, for example, you can be doing that in response. It has a lot of utility, and I think it's just an awesome card that is kind of like my style of card that I would really like to play. The question is, what gets chopped?
Personally, I think that if you add Possessed Portal, you're actually kind of fundamentally changing the deck into a more stacksy version of it. So I think that you'd have to redefine the way the deck plays just to play that card personally.
So, Quirk, you're proposing that it's like a cascading, like, domino effect, that I'd want to be changing further things in response to running Possessed Portal.
Correct.
Cool. So, yeah, I guess, like, in your case, if you have, like, a short list, name, like, 4 or 5 cards even, I would consider swapping all those out. And I guess part of that package, would you consider running the Udvara Hellkite as part of that more stacksy build?
Absolutely. And I'd also throw in Academy Manufacturer and focus on the more... create more artifacts type of experience to just jam out the artifacts.
Yeah, I think that's smart. I think that's like a really dynamic way to think about that it's not just one card that's being changed.
I've always wondered, and this is my hot take, and I'm by no means a Magda player, But I am a big fan, and this is going to be a lengthy story. I'm a big fan of Tinker and Vintage. I think Tinker is one of my favorite cards. It's insanely busted. And there's a couple of reasons why you can't play Tinker. One, it's blue, and two, it's super banned. But with all the artifact shenanigans and all of the treasures you're making, how come we've never considered, and this is kind of fits into the Possessed Portal world, actually, of playing stuff like Trash for Treasure as a way to kind of rebuy, or like, you know, you have the Goblin Welder, I think, is in the deck list, and then you have Goblin, is it Engineer? Engineer, the one that like lets you recur low-cost stuff, but lets you dump whatever you want into the bin, as well as like things like Faithless Looting and stuff like that, to put these kind of like wombo combo powerful artifacts, kind of just dump them into your graveyard, and then, you know, convert a treasure token into you know, something big and scary.
All right, Cypher, so I'm going to give you a politician answer where I don't exactly answer your question, but I segue into something that I want to talk about.
Perfect.
So it's similar to how I'm not running Underworld Breach. I think that's a very like relevant like red staple that I'm not on. And the reason, and I was running it for a long time. I play tested for a long time with Breach because it was just like the card to play. The reason I cut it is because I didn't feel like I could reliably set up my graveyard. And I feel the same way about Trash for Treasure. I can't remember if it was in version one of my deck or not. I know it was literally, I know for a fact it was in my pile of things that I wanted to put in the deck at one point. But the only reliable way I was getting my, that I was getting certain targets into my graveyard were, like you said, with Goblin Engineer or with something like just having it in my hand with a Wheel of Fortune. So yeah, it just wasn't reliable enough because obviously I'm not on Entomb, and it's difficult enough to tutor for just like Dockside as it is, let alone setting up something in my graveyard to then reanimate with a sorcery that I also can't tutor for. So yeah, it's just a lot of hoops, and it wasn't reliable enough for me. I think the ceiling is very high, but the floor is very low, unfortunately.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Like I said, I haven't thought too deep into that. I just know that it's one of the cards that I like. I want to break Trash for Treasure. It's my goal.
Yeah, maybe like, I don't know. I guess it's probably too cost intensive for Brea, right?
Yeah, I think the best deck for it is something with Armix in the command zone.
Just having, yeah, like, I like that. Because then you get the discard ally with Armix, and you also get black with Entomb, so...
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. Like a black red, I mean, plus maybe other colors, but like at least a black red, what, mid rangey deck?
Yeah, something to that. I haven't figured it out yet. I mean, the main card to get with Trash for Treasure in that is just you reanimate Citadel, and then you're just off to the races, right? Like Entomb, Citadel, Trash for Treasure.
Yeah.
Put Citadel.
Citadel definitely seems to lean. I mean, you obviously can go with the combo, but like Citadel in a mid range deck. I mean, I played the green black Citadel list when it was in standard with all like the explore guys and was it Wild Growth Walker? The one that you gain life whenever you explore. I thought that was a very good Citadel mid range deck. And it's always pleasant to see a Citadel that doesn't just immediately win the game. It's cool how dynamic that card is. Whereas like Adnaz, you're kind of going all in, you're trying to win or die the following turn in most cases. But I think Citadel, you have a lot of play patterns, and the Trash for Treasure into that, yeah, gives you a lot of options. I think that's a really cool baseline for a deck. I'm curious to see what you could brew that runs that.
Yeah, just a thought. Like I said, that's one of the cards that I've been looking at a lot lately, and I was like, huh, this deck sure makes a lot of treasures that I can sack to this card and get something cool back, so maybe one day. But that's all for another day, folks. So that's kind of a quick wrap up on where we are with Magda for this week. Hope you guys enjoyed listening in and tuning in. It was another great episode here. Really, really happy how it came out. As always, links to all of the deck list and everything we talked about today will be in the show notes down below. So make sure to check that out. And as always, you can find us online, follow all our social medias. Really helps us out a lot. Let us know how we're doing. Yeah, that's about it, guys. Any last minute thing before we kind of close the show up for good?
No.
All right.
Red is in, baby.
Red love, baby. So with that, I'm Cypher.
I'm Cork.
And my name is Y, and I am almost out of coffee. One moment, please. Ooh, a lot of the ganache went to the bottom. I am now out of coffee. Thank you for watching.
Later, guys.